Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 1, The Day Will Come When You Won't Be, is still over, but we're just getting started taking your feedback here on The Walking Dead Feedback Show on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler. Unfortunately, Rob Cesternino could not be here. Negan didn't think that Rob was high enough on the episode on our recap on Sunday night, so he bashed his head in, and we need a replacement. So we're bringing in Alex Kidwell. Hopefully, he's going to be a lot higher on the episode. Up to Negan standards here is what we're looking for, Alex.
Pressure's on, but I'll try to deliver. I'm excited to be here, Josh. Is this the Wiggle Room? I've heard nice things about this place.
No, the Wiggle Room's a different podcast. Wiggle Room's... Oh, my God. I mean, you are in my room, but it is strewn in guts and brain matter, so I need to clean up next time I have somebody over as a guest on a podcast.
Oh dear. Yeah. I've walked in now, and I'm not comfortable with what I'm seeing. This is not the safe space I was promised.
It's gross. It's icky. It's sticky. It's bad. None of this is good. This is a terrible place to be.
Yeah, I can. I'm gathering very quickly.
All right. So Rob can't be here. In reality, he is on his way back from doing the live know-it-alls in New York City from this past week. He is on his way back to L.A. So Alex is stepping in. Alex, of course, you know him from all sorts of podcasts. He is our man behind the scenes on the Walking Dead podcast, and of course, is on the Fear the Walking Dead podcast. Alex, huge Walking Dead guy. You and I talked a little bit when we saw each other this week in New York. So I already know a little bit about your take on the Walking Dead premiere, but I'd love for you to just like air that out first before we even get into any of the feedback.
Cool. Yeah. So overwhelmingly, I think my takeaway was mostly positive, which I think a lot of people have been very negative. And I think more than anything, I've been negative about the negative reviews in the sense that I don't really empathize with a lot of what I'm seeing out there, which is kind of the expression that like this was too much from a horror series or
too gross.
Yeah, too gross. I mean, I understand, but at the same time, like this is probably a lot of the same vocal minority that was saying the show doesn't do anything major or take any major characters off the board all through season six. So it's hard for the show to find a middle ground that's going to make everyone happy, I guess. Ultimately, this has always been kind of a gruesome and brutal show, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said on Sunday night, I think that the show was in a lose-lose position where, like, there's definitely people who are going to like the premiere, and certainly plenty of people did, and you're one of them, and Rob liked the premiere as well. And I liked parts of the premiere. I mostly disliked it, but there were things that I did enjoy. But I think that given the way things were set up with like that cliffhanger and the expectations of who was going to die and a bunch of people really feeling strongly that it was going to be Glenn, so they had all summer to kind of deal with that. I think that there was just probably no way to really do that in a way that was going to satisfy everybody. And you're never, ever going to be able to satisfy everybody, but I think it was in a position where it wouldn't even be able to satisfy probably more than like half of the crowd. I think that Walking Dead was really backed into a corner of its own making, in my opinion, with the cliffhanger, with all of the setup that happened with Glenn earlier in season six, and that not really paying off super well, and then only to come back in the first episode of season seven, take 20 minutes to get to the Glenn death, and even troll that out a little bit further, I think really sat poorly with some people. Though really my issues with the episode comes more in terms of writing, not about like the act of violence, not about the gore or anything like that. I think that there were some writing choices that were just a little sloppy to me. But in terms of the thing that really seems to like grind your gears about the reaction to it, I don't have that problem at all. I think that this is The Walking Dead. It's really disgusting. People die in horrible ways. And we should be used to that to some degree by now.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, the criticism that you're pointing out are fair to point out. I mean, I certainly, you know, we talked about it a little bit when we met up this week, but I managed to, I got home late. So I started the episode about halfway through. So I didn't have to sit through two commercial breaks to wait to find out. I got to fast forward through those breaks. So maybe that makes a difference. I'm not sure. But certainly I think it's a little silly that we wait a summer plus two commercial breaks for like what kind of reveal needs exactly that time?
Frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, but then, you know, like you said, yeah, I mean, when I'm reading, you know, stuff from like The Guardian that's calling it torture porn, I'm like, well, that's not – I can't get down with that because did you not see like Everybody Hates Chris getting eaten apart in the, you know, the rotating door or like people getting their noses bit off at slow motion? Like, I don't know, man. This is what it's always been.
Yeah, well, where I do feel like it's torture porn is they're like really dragging out the moment, you know, like they're really making a meal out of like the who's going to get it. And they're really, you know, they extended it across 6 months and then then they extend it for another 25 minutes. So it shows me that they thought that this was like a really cool wait and see moment, as opposed to a moment that's really supposed to horrify you and unnerve you and really leave you gutted and feeling perhaps a little bit brainless in the moment as well. I think it was a little bit of a miscalculation in terms of how much are people excited about the reveal versus how much are they dreading the reveal. So I think that there is a little something torture porny about that, about stretching that out too long.
Yeah, I could see that point. And then also, you know, yeah, I mean.
And obviously on a binge, it's going to play very differently. The whole thing is going to play very differently.
Exactly. And then I think the fact that, you know, yeah, I mean, we take two characters off the board in pretty gruesome fashion. And then, yeah, maybe, you know, if I'm going to side with you on one thing, did we need the, you know, God to Abraham, kill your son, cut off his arm moment on top of everything else this week? Maybe not. But, you know,
enough Abraham action in this episode without going the biblical route as well.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. All right. So we've got a ton of feedback to get through here on the feedback show. Of course, you can always send in feedback to us through our email, twd@postshowrecaps.com. Our feedback form works beautifully as well, postshowrecaps.com/feedback. And in the future, we will be taking your voicemails, postshowrecaps.com/voicemail for the next podcast. We don't have voicemails that we will be playing on this week's podcast because Rob is really the guy who knows how to do that stuff, and I'm an idiot and I don't know how to do it. So we're just going to take text questions, email questions this time, but we still have a lot. We got plenty to go through, Alex, if you're ready to start getting into it.
Yes, I'm ready. My eyes are in good shape.
Nothing's. Yeah. I mean, you pointed this out. I mean, really trolling me on the eye stuff. You know, I very famously am not a fan of anything bad happening to eyeballs. And so having to stare at Glenn's eye for a while, his protruding eye, that was gross. I wasn't happy about it.
It legitimately made my dreams that night. I'm not going to lie to you.
It was gross. All right. So let's start by talking about the premiere just kind of broadly. And certainly plenty of people had very, very different reactions. I had a lot of people who would tweet at me saying they were siding with my take, that they didn't like the premiere that much, that they thought it was ill-conceived. A lot of people who were saying I was crazy, who were siding with Rob, who really, really liked the premiere. So let's kind of take stock of some of those positions. And let's start with Jackie Toemeyer, who wrote in defense of the premiere and said, "As always, thanks for an in-depth, thought-provoking podcast. I am usually all in and agree with everything Josh says, but..." So there's a but. "Josh said one death would have been enough, and it might have been if Rick would have submitted earlier, but Rick was still clearly defiant, and Negan needed to make another killing to really break Rick. If Glenn hadn't died as a result of Rick, then I don't think it would have propelled the story forward enough to show us that Rick will submit to Negan's rule. I am not defending Negan at all. I hate that Glenn and Abraham died, but the story would not have been believable if Negan hadn't taken out Glenn." Alex, what's your reaction to that?
I like it. I like what she's saying. I think she's making a lot of sense. I definitely felt like, you know, the Abraham one, as much as I love Abraham, and I love me some Michael Cudlitz.
Yeah. I can't wait to see where he winds up, by the way.
I felt a little – I'm not going to lie. I felt guilty about it, but I felt a little bit of relief when Negan picks him, just because, you know, if anyone can handle this and, like, be at peace in the moment of something so horrible, it's bad boy friggin' Abraham. Right. You know that. But as soon as – Glenn is then just, you know, suddenly added to the equation, it is like the sudden, like, return to me almost of that, you know, the feeling that you should have the whole time where it's like, oh God, no, you know? So I think there was something to that that was good. Everyone knew someone was getting taken off the board tonight or that night.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people were really thinking they might go with two. So I thought it was a good call.
Yeah. There had been some buzz leading into it that it's like, it's deaths. It's not just one death. You guys are going to be shocked. There's going to be two. So that there was a little bit of something in the air that people seem to be suspecting that. I'm a little suspicious of that.
Glad I avoided all those rumors.
Yeah. I heard the buzz on that. And I think with Abraham, I think it's a good note. And I think it's one of the things that, you know, there's been a lot of, there's been a lot of interviews with Stephen Yeun and Michael Cudlitz and people involved with the show in the fallout of the premiere, now that everybody can kind of talk openly about what happened. And I really do like Cudlitz, his explanation for Abraham. And in retrospect, I think you see it in the season 6 finale where he kind of like straightens up and looks Negan in the eye when Negan has announced that he's going to kill somebody, and he's sort of surveying the group. That it's like in that moment that Abraham is looking up at Negan, Abraham is basically saying, kill me. I can shoulder this for the group. Take me out. And like in that moment, his interpretation is like Negan knows that. Negan's already figured it out, and he's just going to keep drawing this out because he wants to figure out the other social dynamics within Rick's group. But in that moment, he's already chosen Abraham. Like the eeny, meeny, miny, moe is just for show. I like that read. I think that that's kind of cool. And I hear what Jackie's saying that, you know, maybe Rick's submission isn't believable enough just on the back of Abraham's death. But maybe that's why he just killed Glenn. It's sort of still where I'm going. Like, I totally feel where Jackie's coming from. Like, I think that Rick's story maybe would not be believable if Negan hadn't taken out Glenn, or at least hadn't taken out someone who's really close to Rick. I just don't know still if they needed to do two. I feel like two still feels a little excessive to me. And we're going to get to Abraham's role in this and whether or not it's being overshadowed a little bit later. But I hear what Jackie's saying about taking out Glenn. I just don't know that they had to take out Glenn and Abraham in order to do this.
I could see that. Yeah, I mean, I still think they did, but if I'm going to give you something, it's going to be the third thing, which is like after Glenn and Abraham, Rick still needs a third lesson with the Carl arm.
Right.
So I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I'll meet you there.
Totally. And great stuff for Andrew Lincoln in this episode that we're going to get through. I think that they really made a meal out of this moment, you know, like turning it into an entire episode of psychological torture, where I feel like the moment of impact, especially on Glenn, that should be enough. Like that feels like enough to me to break Rick, but we go the full distance. What are you going to do? This is from John Santucci, who wants to raise one of the counter arguments against the premiere. You've already touched on this, so I feel like I know your position, but this is from John. John writes in and says, my question has to do with the graphic violence of the first episode of season 7. I was binge watching all 6 seasons of the show in anticipation of the premiere with my wife, who'd never watched the show. In the few weeks it took, she became quite attached to the characters, and the graphic death of 2 of them really affected her to the point where I'm not sure she'll watch episode 2 next week. It got me thinking about how many others may be dropping out after the violent, almost exploitative and voyeuristic deaths of 2 main characters. Which brings me to my question, did The Walking Dead go too far this time, and will they experience a drop in viewership? They will not experience a drop in viewership, I think, is certainly one of the answers, considering that I don't have the rating numbers right in front of me, but I think the season 7 premiere was like the most watched episode of The Walking Dead ever, or was really, really close.
It's all anyone's talking about that I'm seeing, Josh. Every time I turn on DVR, it's the first thing that's being plugged. I understand why people feel this way. Yeah. I don't agree. I think they needed to, you know, they needed their impact. I think coming out of season 6, there was a lot of apathy with the show. And I think people are really remembering that, like in May, a lot of the sentiment was, is this show ever going to make us feel like these people, like people are starting to wonder if people had plot armor on this show. You know what I mean? We were right at a very different place several months ago. So I don't know. It's hard for me to get down with that.
People absolutely have plot armor on this.
Yeah.
You know, some people. Rick is armed up. He's doing pretty well.
Well, is his arm?
Well, his arm is okay, although people were very, very worried. And just as an aside, because we're not doing the comic book, we're not doing the book club podcasts regularly this season. Jess and I will get together probably after the first half of season 7 wraps, and we'll do a rundown whenever she's available for podcasting. But just as an Easter egg, there was a lot of reason to be concerned with that hatchet and the talk about Rick's right hand when Negan is really, really trolling him there. There's a moment in the comics that has not happened on the show that I don't think is ever going to happen on the show that involves Rick and his hand. And the Carl's arm thing is sort of leaning in on that as well. I think that we've dodged that bullet, but it was definitely cause for some concern. There was some anxiety on that front for me, at least.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite recurring themes on The Walking Dead. Will they or won't they?
Yeah. It was definitely one of those moments. I think, you know, I get where people are coming from, actually, on this one with the violence. And it goes back to why I was saying I think the premiere was something of a lose-lose. Because if they don't come back, a lose-Lucille, if they don't come back here, and if they don't kill somebody graphically, then they're going to be accused of not having teeth. Like, if they don't kill somebody who matters at least somewhat, and if they don't do it in, like, a real skull crushing, brain bashing way, it's going to look like they just like whiffed on it because they were too scared based on the polarizing reaction to the finale. But if they do come back and if they do kill someone significant and if they do it in a really, really gory display, then I think you do get this reaction as well from people who like have grown with this show, with Steven Yeun, who have seen Glenn across six full seasons, who have fallen hard for that character. And then to watch him, you know, get his brains bashed in front of Maggie, who's pregnant and very, very sick, in this really, really graphic, really, really disgusting way. It's just, it's so dark that I think that if it had happened really suddenly in the moment in the season six finale and we were left to sort of, you know, wallow in the grief and the anguish, I don't know if it would have been better. I think it still would have, the show still would have come under the same fire that it's getting right now for being so gross. But I think that the buildup to it didn't help. I think that really dragging out the concept that somebody was going to die and somebody's going to die very, very viciously, I think that that only hurt the impact of it in terms of some people thinking it was too much.
I'll agree with that. I think there's definitely a lot of ways this could have been smoothened out. Like, there's a lot of little bumps. I don't think there's any major, you know, potholes per se, but the road is not smooth. I'll give you that. However, I am a little discouraged when I hear people say, like, I've been so invested for six seasons and this makes me want to get out, because I think, you know, I get it. It's like, it's hard to watch. It was rough. It was really, really rough on all of us. But there's something, I mean, don't you want to see, where does Maggie go from here? How does Maggie possibly rebound? Like, how is she able to pick up the pieces? What about Sasha? Like, right. There are people left just broken after this. And I want to see where they go. I'm now, you know, you take pieces off the board and it creates a vacuum. And other people now need to step up and fill new roles. And I'm excited to see how that happens. You know, we've seen that in the past with T-Dog and Tyrese and other people. It just hasn't been people that we've come to. You know, we never got Dale for six seasons, or maybe right. We would have liked him this much. You know what I mean? So it's when you take someone off the board who's been there the whole time, it's going to leave this huge void. And I'm just excited to see how that gets filled up. Will Eugene become a new badass? I don't know, but he's maybe going to have to, you know?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. But that was something that I wrote about this week. I wrote a little column on THR this week about why people might be frustrated with Walking Dead. And I reflected it against Game of Thrones, and not to get into any Game of Thrones spoilers other than to say people die on Game of Thrones, and like major characters die on Game of Thrones, often in majorly violent ways.
Early and often.
Early and often, and even late beloved characters will die, and it's really shocking. And Game of Thrones tried a little bit of a cliffhanger thing a season or so ago that really upset a bunch of people, but there was something optimistic about that twist. There was reason to be hopeful about that twist, whereas The Walking Dead's twist is really dark, and there's no reason to hope whatsoever. You know that somebody's going to die. The only thing you can hope for is it's not going to be your favorite character.
Right.
That's really it. But you know that somebody is about to go. But the other thing, and I wrote this in reaction to Greg Nicotero, who directed the episode, talking about how, talking about the reactions from people who are really upset and who are threatening to leave the show and being like, I'm shocked by Game of Thrones. This is what he said, not verbatim. He said something to the effect of, I'm shocked by Game of Thrones often, all the time, but I still stick with it because I want to see where the story is going. And for me, one of the great distinctions between Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, and maybe it's not so true for the books because who knows what's going to happen with the books, but Game of Thrones, the TV show, is going to end. And it's going to end on its own terms, and it's going to end fairly soon. It's got about 2 years left. There's two more seasons of Game of Thrones, and then it's done. And I think people really stick with the violence on that show because they know that it's building to something, that it's going to matter, that every person that is taken off the board is taken off the board for a reason, whether it's to simplify the plot as the plot is driving towards some sort of blazing conclusion. It's a conclusion at least that they are driving toward. Walking Dead is built on the idea that this is the zombie movie that never ends. That is how it was pitched. That's how it was originally created by Robert Kirkman when he was making the comics. And there's really no end in sight. For the comics, certainly. And the show, there's no guarantee that the show is going to end before, you know, like, the people that we know right now are still on it. Like, we could see the day where, like, we're at Walking Dead season 11, and finally Andrew Lincoln is able to get out of his contract, and he's killed in a really horrible way, and the show just continues.
Carl takes over.
Yeah, maybe, or it's just now it's like a completely new cast and the story just continues on.
Travis Manala shows up.
Travis shows up on his on Strand's boat and they just roll in. So I think that there's something to that. Like, there's a sense of, like, you can stick with violence on a show if you know that it's going to pay off, if you know that it's going to have impact. But with Walking Dead, you hope, you certainly hope that it's going to matter, and you certainly hope that this is all building towards something. But for me, it was really a stark reminder, no Game of Thrones pun intended, that this show does not have a conclusive point that it's necessarily driving for, at least not one that has manifested for us. And I think that with people who are feeling like they want to bail, or who are feeling really disturbed by what happened in the premiere, I got to imagine that that's a factor, that this show, this story is so open-ended that we spent all of this time investing in Glenn only for him to be so savagely taken away, with the possibility that it's never really going to fully matter if the story is not going to end at some point, and that this could just happen to Daryl next, like whenever Norman Reedus wants off the show. So I think that there's something a little bit to that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a factor. I also, you know, now that I think about it, I feel like maybe the audience has a little bit of what Rick's group had, like the Alexandria effect, where it's like, we've been safe now for a little while. So we're like developing complacency in like interpersonal relationships, and people starting to hook up and be safe. And now it's all just suddenly snatched away. And this is a reminder of like, oh yeah, like the road on the prison, like looking around, never being safe. Like this is that world when you don't have walls that can keep people back. So I like that element of it, but I also think, I'm interested to see, you know, how this advances, you know, politically speaking. And I like kind of some of the just larger scale dynamics. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, the world has ended, and, you know, it's been nothing and chaos for so long. Now we're gradually building back to some semblance of civilizations, like pockets of culture. And so you see, like, there's this group over here, you've got this hilltop. And then Negan, to me, is basically Genghis Khan, where he's just roving from spot to spot, and he's saying, like, either pay me or I kill you. And most people choose to pay. That's how it worked back then, too.
Yeah. No, well, I think that, you know, as much as I didn't love the premiere, I do feel like the show has promise in terms of the fallout of this story. I think that the way that characters react to what just happened, and the players that are on the board right now between Negan and the Saviors and all the communities that are in play as well, I think that that all can be very interesting still. Like, I think that there's still potential. I'm not super optimistic just because I'm really not thrilled with the writing on the show right now, but I think that the actors have been so charismatic across the years that they really elevate the characters oftentimes. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they all react to the situations, and we'll see how that all plays out. Let's talk about Glenn a little bit more. And in terms of, you know, not even so much in terms of like the surprise that it was Glenn, or the lack thereof, or anything like that, or the gore, the gratuitousness, but something that I think is a valid point about Glenn, and this was written in by a few people. We'll take it from Rob Craig, who had written in and said, "The penultimate episode of season 6 ended with Daryl being shot as the camera went to black. In the finale, we got nothing from any of those characters in the van. Are you surprised that this season did not start by showing the perspective of the four people in the van? It seems like a disservice to a character like Glenn to get killed off without a proper send-off. I did think Glenn was going to get the bat, but I thought he would get more of a story arc in his final episode." Daniel Dolan had written in with a similar sentiment and said, "I didn't think the premiere would show Negan's victim right away. I expected we would flash back to the van people to catch up on their story before getting to the point where one of them, presumably Glenn, was killed. This would have served to give us at least one last Glenn storyline before he was killed. Did the writers think they were being clever by leaving him out of the finale entirely up until the Negan lineup? Also, does this mean there will never be any payoff to the Daryl got shot cliffhanger? Or is that answer to that one just going to be one of those, yeah, that happened, but look, now he's okay, thank goodness?" So yeah, that's probably the answer to the Daryl's getting shot thing.
Like, yep, he passed locked. Right through.
Yeah, we're good. It's passed through. He'll be okay. But what do you think about this point about Glenn, that there's really no story for him in the final episode of season 6. His final episode where he's really doing anything is the penultimate of season 6, where I think that he's hanging out with Michonne. And then he's just killed off, really, without getting much of a moment here other than his death scene in the season 7 premiere. Do you think that the show should have given Glenn more? Should Glenn have had a moment here?
Well, my first thought is that you definitely do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely remember after the season 6 finale, because I was definitely sure that it was going to be Glenn, both for the comic book reasons, but also, as I expressed several times, like, I really thought that whoever was getting the bat was going to be the perspective character from the van. And I'm still a little raw about that.
Were very much like All the President's Men with the van back into the left, like watching that footage. That was you.
And I'm annoyed that it didn't pay off because because I feel like that's what they were building. And then they came up with a surprise after the fact. But we don't need to go down that rabbit hole anymore. My feelings on the matter are pretty clear. I do think that like there's no Glenn story and he just kind of gets ripped off like a Band-Aid. And there's definitely something to that, you know, the sudden brutal nature of, you know, death at large, but certainly death in this world and how suddenly things can change for somebody with so much story and so much heart and somebody that we've invested so much in. But yeah, I do think that it would have been nice to get a little bit more of Glenn. Maybe it would have telegraphed things a little bit further. And the surprise of Glenn's death would be cheapened a little bit by going back to Glenn. So I think that that's maybe an argument in favor of keeping him hidden. But I almost feel like, I don't know if you want to soften the blow, but maybe it softens the blow a little bit if there's some sort of Glenn story that you can get before Glenn is killed. Or if the episode begins with Glenn getting killed and then littered throughout the episode, or maybe like flashbacks of Glenn or something like that to kind of leave you with a little bit of a warmer, you know, feeling about Glenn than this final cold image of him just getting his brains bashed in.
Yeah, no, I think you hit it. I think in hindsight, looking back, seeing how some people reacted, maybe that would have been the way to go. I think this is an example of why this is a very difficult show to write. It's got such a wide audience and so many people love this show. And so to try to navigate a path that's going to make everyone happy is going to be understandably difficult. But yeah, like you said, if you do all that, maybe it, you know, like I said, for me personally, the Abraham moment was a bit of a relief. When he suddenly smacks Glenn, it took me right back to that like, oh, moment. So if they do all that, do I feel the same way? I don't know. Maybe not. But at the same time, do all these people who are turned off feel like going away? Maybe not. So yeah, it's a tough tightrope they have to walk.
Like, I feel like if the episode opens, if Abraham isn't killed and Glenn gets killed and the episode opens with Glenn just being murdered right away, like that's the first thing you see. It's an immediate payoff to the finale's cliffhanger, and then studded throughout the rest of the episode, if it's like a let's get Glenn's body to the hilltop thing, it's just like memories of Glenn. At least that's like a way to honor the fallen character, and you also don't lose the surprise if he's killed right away. That's probably how I would have done it. I'm not paid to work on the show, so this is just one man's fan fiction.
Sounds like what you and Chris Hardwick wrote that episode, I think.
Chris Hardwick is furiously writing fan fiction for The Walking Dead, trying anything he can to get out of the rain and get into the warmth of The Walking Dead. All right, let's take this from Dan from Minnesota, who wants to talk more about Abraham. Dan says, Abraham was my favorite character, so obviously I'm upset that he's dead. But I'm even more upset because it seems like Glenn is getting all the attention. Where are the eulogies for Abraham? Does the group even care, or are they too hung up on losing someone who's been on the show since season one? Did the show do Abraham a disservice by killing him off here alongside Glenn? Alex, what's your take on that?
Maybe. You know, yes, it certainly probably has more impact if Abraham is, you know, given his own separate instance. But at the same time, it's kind of I like the way he went out. You know, it's like, is he not the main takeaway? Maybe. But at the same time, he was kind of the hero that the group, maybe not the one they deserved, but the one they needed.
Yeah,
you know, like
right.
he really stepped up in that moment. And to be honest, I loved his explanation, the one you talked about, because that was my hopeful interpretation when I was watching the season six finale, when he stood up like that and, you know, made himself tall. I was thinking like, I think that's what he's trying to do. I mean, that just speaks so well to this character. And I think, you know, the mass is out there. There's lots of Glenn lovers out there, but those of us who are the diehard Abraham fans, you know, we can come together and have our parties in the shadows as well, I think. I'm totally on board with that.
What's our name for all you lunatics who are such diehard Abraham fans? I want to pitch Abraham's Nuts.
I love that.
You're his nuts.
Yes.
Yeah, you're all a bunch of nuts.
And whoever's the president of the fan club gets to be Mother Dick.
That's right. Oh, my God. I will miss Abraham so much because his dialogue was just the best.
The best.
They really loaded him up with great stuff. And I too, like Michael Cudlitz's explanation for Abraham. And I think that that's really cool. And it's very in character for Abraham to just be like, yeah, I got this. He's the one who feels like I can shoulder this for the group. This is an inevitability that someone's about to die. Let it be me. I can handle it.
And he flashes the little peace sign to Sasha. Yeah, that was cute.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that during the immediate after recap with Rob, but we got tweeted. I forget who tweeted it our way. This image of Abraham flashing the peace sign at Sasha, which is a call back to the times that they would flash the peace sign up at each other. So that's cool. I like that. I think that that's a nice little touch as well. And that feels to me like an actor choice. Like that feels to me like something that was done on the day. So I really enjoyed that. And the other thing that I think is, you know, to switch positions and to defend the show a little bit, I think that one thing that the Abraham death does do that the Glenn death still does, but not as much for certain characters, is like Eugene and Rosita, and like who came with Abraham and Sasha. Like, will Eugene, Rosita, and Sasha, will they be as affected by the Glenn death as like the original people from the group and Michonne and like everyone who's really, really core to the show? They would certainly be rattled, but maybe not rattled enough. But losing Abraham is losing their pillar. Like losing right. Abraham is losing their guy. And the cast of Walking Dead is gigantic. It's humongous. So there's, you know, so many people that you have to service in order to really, really make impact felt for every single person. And maybe that's a problem of its own, is the size of the cast. But given the size of the cast, and given that Eugene and Rosita and Sasha are in the mix here, I think stripping Abraham away really does a lot for them. I think that that really propels their stories forward a lot.
Yeah, and I think, you know, probably safe to say at this point, but for the record, Abraham is already off the board at this point in the comic book storyline. So this is a character who, at least from the source material, had run his course. I would have loved it if he could have stuck around longer because, like we talked about, he's awesome. But I understand why they felt like this was an appropriate time to do this.
Well, let me ask you, and then I'll just throw this out there, since, as you mentioned, Abraham is already dead at this point in the story in the comic books. So comic book spoilers here. So apologies if you're not into that, but we're past this point in terms of both the story of the comics and the show. But Abraham is killed shortly before the Lucille incident. He is the person who gets shot in the back of the head with an arrow mid-conversation with Eugene. On the show, they gave that death to Denise, which I didn't love. I did not care for the fact that that's how they A, killed Denise, and B, killed Denise at all, because I really like Denise.
Right.
But
we haven't seen Tara in 2 years.
I know. Tara's been gone. Well, again, like, to talk about the size of the group, like, how, I mean, Tara liked Glenn a lot, so I think that losing Glenn would be enough for her. But, you know, she's going to be doubly upset when she finds out what happened to Denise, assuming that Tara lives long enough to find out, or if she ever returns to the show. But that's the way that Abraham goes, and one of the things that I loved about that in the comics is that was so sudden, and it's such an unceremonious death for such a massive figure in the comic at that point. And it really is, like, again, about the massive part. It's like, it's one really swift, unexpected way to drop a tree. Like, he's the biggest tree in the forest, and he's taken out with an arrow to the back of the head, and he has no idea. There's definitely something that's more Abraham about his death on the show, that he stands up, he draws in the kill, he takes one for the team. But I also really like the suddenness of it in the comic, and I think that Abraham losing that on the show, I feel like that's a moment that maybe we lost here, the opportunity to see Michael Cudlitz deliver one final really fantastic monologue with an arrow getting shot into his head as like his final thing. I think that that would have been really, really fun. I do wish that the show had stuck a little closer to the comic on this stuff, but I also do think a couple days out with Cudlitz's explanation for Abraham's move and everything like that, that there's definitely some good here as well.
Yeah. I think it's like, if you really kind of think about it, the more you think about it, the more you realize that is like the one little bright spot in this like overwhelming just torrent of dark misery here. That Abraham
was willing to do it, in a way,
taking control away from Negan, like kind of putting the power into his own hands and making a decision that no one wanted to make.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that that's cool. Let's go back to John Santucci and let's hear this from him. I think that this is good. With the deaths of Abraham and Glenn, Rick has lost two of his best lieutenants. Plus, Daryl is MIA. Who do you who do you see taking on a bigger role in support of a broken down Rick Grimes? So what do you think, Alex? Who's left on the board? Who is going to be the new lieutenant? If Abraham is gone, if Glenn is gone, both of those guys gone for good, Daryl is gone at least for now, who is going to be Rick's number two? Who does number two work for?
Well, pickings suddenly look kind of slim. Clearly the three best options no longer available, I think. Certainly you would expect Aaron be stepping up. Eugene, you'd like to hope he'd be stepping up. Although, you know, attitude seemed to be in the right place. Late season six, he's certainly more aggressive, more willing to take things on. Got captured pretty quickly.
He had the
car. So like, how did you get caught? So he like, shouldn't you have just kept moving and kept the doors locked? I don't know how they got Eugene so easy. So that makes
Eugene's
me a little
got some explaining to do is what you're
yes,
saying.
Yes. Before I'm putting him in power, I need answers on what happened there when we left the Winnebago in your hands.
Yeah. And him and Aaron were crying so much. These blubbering babies over here. How can we trust them if they're going to cry in the face of their friends getting their brains bashed in? They need to be tougher than that.
Ah, come on.
They were crying so much that I'm surprised Rob wasn't as upset with their their funeral style reactions to the deaths of Glenn and Abraham.
Well, speaking of Rob being upset, what would really get Rob upset is if the number two man becomes Father Gabriel.
Yeah, that would upset him. I feel like Rosita being the number two maybe wouldn't be so great. I do think that one of the things that is cool about losing these characters, though, speaking of Rosita, it's like this is now Rosita's moment. Like, yeah. And this is Sasha's moment. And this is Maggie's moment.
Especially Maggie.
Yeah.
She's got a lot to deal with right now.
A ton to deal with. And, I think that she's always been a really solid character. And they certainly started building up her role as a leader in season six with her negotiation at the hilltop. Now she's sick still. That hasn't resolved, even if she's able to stand up in this episode, which is somewhat miraculous. She's still not feeling well. She's just lost the love of her life. And she has every reason in the world to, fall into a spiral of grief. Or she could react very differently by champing up and really being the strong one in the face of what Negan brings to the table. So lots of great potential for Maggie there. Rosita, who is a character that has not had much to do at all on the show, could show up here in reaction to what happened to Abraham. Sasha as well. I love how Sasha builds up Maggie in the final scene of this premiere. I thought was really, really great. So there's some really good potential for those three characters, especially who maybe are, not like the obvious picks for a lieutenant role for Rick. But I think that, those three characters, if the show writes them well enough, I think I'm really looking forward to where their seasons could go. And yeah, of course, Eugene is a great option as well. If, he can pull himself together, if he can provide an adequate explanation for why he got captured so swiftly, and if he can pull himself together once they get back to Alexandria, if he can honor Abraham by maintaining his status as a level two, a stage two badass, that could be good. He could even go to stage three.
Final evolved form.
Final evolved form. What about Carl? What about Carl as a lieutenant?
I worry about Carl where his head's at right now because
he has a head.
He does. But he came into that confrontation thinking that we're always going to be able to get ourselves out of it. Like Rick really had gotten Carl to a place where Carl's like, I'm never going to let anything bad happen to anyone I care about ever again.
Right.
And now he sees that that's not something you get to control.
Yeah.
So how's that going to affect this kid who thought he understood the world and now realizes, in Negan's words, like, you don't know shit, basically.
Yeah.
And then, as far as lieutenants go, I think probably the most qualified choice is Sasha. But, do you really want to take her out of the bell tower? She's such a good shot.
She's such a good shot. I think, obviously, people probably screaming at the podcast at this point is Michonne, who is, Rick's significant other. So that's a big factor. So clearly they trust each other a ton. And she's an insane badass,
Mm-hmm.
So,
but do you want to make her the lieutenant, knowing what Negan does to your lieutenants?
It's a good point. It's a very good point. And I think that
it's an argument for Father Gabriel.
Yeah, I think it is an argument for Father Gabriel. And I think that it's a good transition into this next question, next series of questions. One from Dominic from Massapequa. Guys, did we just see Rick go full Reek? You never want to go full Reek. Reek Grimes. Hashtag Reek Grimes. And Spencer Y had also written and said, what did you guys think about the mind games that Negan played with Rick during the RV side trip and with making him think that Carl's arm would have to be lopped off in order to save the group from getting headshots? Was it more or less devious than what Ramsay did to Theon in Game of Thrones? Minor spoilers. And was Rick truly broken emotionally, or did he just put on an acting job at the end to mercifully spare his group from any more torture during that horrible night? How quickly will Rick bounce back to his hard-edged ways? How many episodes do you think Rick will tolerate being Negan's errand boy? So a lot to chew on there. I guess a lot of people were thinking Reek Grimes, which I think is pretty fun. But what do you think about this? Is Rick acting in this moment, or is he actually broken by Negan by the end of the episode?
Well, we know that he's, you know, after both heads are bashed in, he's still at a point where he's ready to say, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
So at that point, it would have been an act. I think by the end, he's genuinely shook with the Carl thing to the point where he's just ready to, I mean, he's happy to give over his life if it's going to spare everyone else. I think as time passes, separation from Negan, they're going to kind of pick up the pieces a little bit. There's a lot of metaphors from Negan here about testicles and neutering and that kind of thing. And I think, you know, surely that's the idea psychologically, is he wants to kind of, you know, clip Rick's aggressiveness, so to speak, and make him docile and complacent. And so, you know, he's allowed them to go. He's given them time. They're going to go back to Alexandria and they're going to, you know, start going back to normal life, and they won't see Negan tomorrow or the next day. And maybe they'll start wondering if, you know, maybe they're in the clear. But sooner or later, you know, could be next week, could be the week after, Negan's going to show up at the door. And according to him, you better let him in.
Yeah, well, he said 1 week. You guys got 1 week. So that seems to be the countdown clock right now. I do think Rick is broken right now. I think Rick is authentically broken in this moment. This episode is really about the breaking of Rick Grimes. I don't think he'll be broken forever. I think that that's not a spoiler to say that, you know, we will see Rick Grimes again. But I do think that we're in for at least a little bit of the Rick Grimes in this moment. And, you know, we're talking about who is going to be Rick's lieutenant. You know, the better question might be is, like, who's going to be the new Rick? If Rick needs a minute to really gather himself, who is going to be the person that really steps up here in terms of taking an anti-Negan position? I think that that almost might be the question that you want to ask. And in terms of, like, how long will it take Rick to get back on his feet? This is one of the reasons why I'm a little nervous about the at least immediate future of The Walking Dead. Is like, I feel like it's going to take a while. We saw in the first half of season 6, Alex, an entire day get dragged across an entire half season of the show. That was a lot to wade through for one 24-hour day. Jack Bauer was rolling in his not quite grave in his prison cell in Russia. So I think that I could see Rick taking an entire half season to really get it back together, if not a full season, which might be really hard to get through if that's the way that it's going to go.
Yeah, we won't see any shot. He'll just always be in the background, just like planting crops. So go back to that guy from season 3 for a little while.
Cropping his pants. All right, this is from, this is from Naidu, who wants to say, quick question that I'm sure has been touched on in the past. At what point does Hollywood consider The Walking Dead for an Emmy? Am I being unreasonable that Andrew Lincoln should be in the running for Best Actor? The premiere episode performance alone should garner him at least a nod. Just my opinion. Thanks, guys. What do you think about this? Should Hollywood be considering The Walking Dead for Emmys, Andrew Lincoln particularly, Alex?
You know, I'm not.
That silence tells
me much.
I
would never be asked to join the Academy. Yes, so, yes. Like, my opinion carries no weight here, but I think Andrew Lincoln's performances are generally very, very impressive.
He's great. He's really good. Yes.
Yeah. And I generally don't agree with a lot of things that win Emmys. So if you're asking my opinion, sure. But nobody's asking my opinion.
Well, you were literally just asked. Your opinion was just asked for.
Oh, well, I mean, nobody like who makes decisions.
Got it. Naidu is not at the head of the Emmys.
Unfortunately.
No. I mean, I think that The Walking Dead is probably not going to be seriously considered for a bunch of Emmys at this point, like in terms of like best drama or best writing or anything like that. I think a lot of the people who watch this show, who are Emmy voters and everything like that, I just don't think would take it seriously. And I think that that ends up, you know, kind of like trickling down to the acting. If an actor on this show were to get an Emmy nod, I think Andrew Lincoln is clearly the choice. He is really, really, really good. I don't know. Have you ever watched any like behind the scenes footage of Andrew Lincoln on set, like anything from like DVD extras or anything like that?
Yeah, and I'm always blown away.
Yeah, like he's crazy. Like he really amps himself up. Like he hits himself, he hits other things, he screams a ton. He really gets himself physically revved up so that he can play Rick Grimes because Rick's life is so intense. That's a process, you know, like for that alone, at least I hope he's getting a bonus every year if he's not getting a nomination. He's really good. He's really good as Rick.
He should at least be asked to come sit down with James Lipton or something. That's the least they can do.
Something like that. All right, let's keep moving. This is from Brandon. This is about the Sunday supper. Brandon writes, during the fantasy spaghetti dinner, we see four candles lit and Morgan takes his hand and unlights the candles. Two are still lit, foreshadowing two more deaths from people at the table by the end of the season? That's a question.
Oh, wow.
What do you think? I haven't really gone back and noticed. I wasn't on Candle Patrol. I wasn't watching the flame. Perhaps I should have.
Me either. Yeah, I was glued in on Glenn holding the baby he'll never get to meet. I mean, how could you take your eyes off that?
Maybe that was the trick. Maybe it was to get us to look at the wrong thing, and we were missing Candlegate.
Yeah, they'll get you with those babies and their fathers, those hypothetical relationships that never established. Those are certainly eye-catching.
Well, if two more people from this table are going to go, let's just play it out and assume that this is correct, Brandon. You're right, and this is foreshadowing two more deaths. So who's going to die that's at this table? Obviously, you take Glenn and Abraham off the board. Maggie is there. Eugene is there. Aaron is there. Enid is there. Carol is there. Father Gabriel is there. Rick is there. Daryl is there. Tara is there. Rosita is there. Morgan is there. And Sasha is there. I don't know if Spencer is there. I can't see Spencer in this picture that I'm
Purple Spencer.
At. Purple Spencer. Yeah. So he's been overlooked. He's not invited to dinner.
Well, Enid is definitely one because she's already starved to death in the closet. Yes. Carl locked her in months ago.
So she's already gone.
So that's one.
And Tara is just presumed dead. At this point.
Tara and Heath, they're still looking for food, so they've starved out at this point.
Do you have a serious answer of those people? Like, is there anyone that you think we could see losing this season, whether it's half season or the full season?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, like I said, I think if they decide they get back to Alexandria and they've got their walls and they lock the gate and they're like, maybe we could just try to hold out. And Negan shows up and they don't give him what he wants and he gets in anyway. He's taking another life. I mean, that's just going to happen. So based on kind of what he's done in the past, I would expect like maybe a Eugene, maybe a Daryl. I mean, Negan's got Daryl. He said, I would take pieces and send them to you if you don't listen to me. So I think Daryl's an easy one.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of Daryl, this came in from Jennifer Hampson, who said, I was intrigued by Negan taking Daryl back with the Saviors. What are the chances that they will try to brainwash Daryl into joining their ranks? Or is Daryl just their insurance policy? What's your take on this, Alex? Do you think that it's just like collateral? We have Daryl, so you guys can't touch us. Otherwise, we'll kill Daryl. Or is there another purpose to bringing Daryl along with the Saviors?
I would guess it's mostly the first thing. However, to me, this was a throwback. Immediately, I thought of the Claimers, right? That like Daryl was brought in by this group of bad guys. And after enough time with them, he started to exhibit some of those mannerisms. Like he fit in fine with those guys when he needed to. So I do wonder if we're going to see Daryl become a little bit of a different person, being that he's now surrounded with like kind of the worst of humanity that's managed to thrive in this horrible world. And yeah, I mean, I think it's very possible that Daryl kind of reverts back to that guy he was with the claimed group, which is, you know, silent, sullen. That's my rabbit asshole, you know, that kind of guy.
Is Dwight going to be his new my rabbit asshole guy?
I can only hope so. Yeah. I mean, if Negan is putting Dwight, like if Negan is putting Daryl on Dwight's team, then Dwight better watch his back. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who plays Negan, of course, weighed in on this in an interview with my editor, Leslie Goldberg, at The Hollywood Reporter, and talked about what does Negan see in Daryl. And this was his answer. Skip ahead a minute or two if you don't want to hear any of this. He says, Negan admires that Daryl hit him and sees him as someone that could be a good right-hand man. His intention is to break Daryl and have him become one of his guys, which makes sense. After what Negan does in that lineup, he knows where he's got Rick at a certain point, but he sees something in Daryl and is going to take advantage of that. It's a chess game, and Negan is going to do anything he can to get the advantage. Negan having Daryl makes Rick think, too. Negan is playing a couple of cards, and you can look at it a couple of different ways. Negan always has a couple of balls in the air, and Daryl is one of them. Leslie Goldberg follows up with a question. Do you think there's potential to see Daryl take over Dwight's role as Negan's right-hand man? And Morgan responds by saying, that's the immediate goal. Sure, that's the whole purpose of this thing. Negan is going to make Daryl his guy. Otherwise, why would he take him?
Yeah, Yeah, and I think it probably speaks to why Negan's contingency is so strong, why he's got all these strapping young men ready to do his bidding, as I think we've been following our group for so long that sometimes it's easy to forget that other people have been at this game just as long, and Negan has been clearly thriving since the zombie apocalypse. I believe he's probably decimated quite a few groups, killed the ones that resisted, and incorporated guys like Daryl who he felt like he could use. So this is probably a move he's done more than once.
Risky move for The Walking Dead to not only pin Glenn's death on the fan favorite character's shoulders, you know, to not only make Daryl responsible for killing Glenn, but possibly turning Daryl into a bad guy if he's successfully brainwashed by the Saviors. What are they trying to do? Are they really trying to, like, turn off every single possible viewer? Is that the plan here?
I mean, it works in wrestling, Josh, sometimes when you take the good guy and he turns on everybody and, you know, the crowd sometimes, you know, they're shocked and mortified, but they tune in next week.
It's the heel turn, right?
Yeah, the big heel turn.
Yeah, the big heel turn. So maybe a heel turn coming for Daryl. Clearly, he has healed up nicely, as we already referenced before. The gunshot in Austin Place had written in and said, one thing that really confused me with the premiere, didn't Daryl get shot in the right shoulder by Dwight earlier in the day? Like Rob, I also am not a doctor, but I have a feeling it might be tough to move your arm, let alone throw a right hook mere hours after a bullet went through it. Do you think this is just an error in continuity, or is there some other explanation?
I'm going to go with adrenaline, I guess. I mean, yeah. It's just so, you know, overcome with rage.
He's a superhero. What are you going to do?
Yeah, he's Daryl Dixon.
He's Daryl Dixon. I think, you know, the sooner that we forget about Daryl getting shot, the better. Everyone's going to be a lot happier. I'm going to be happier for sure. Let's start wrapping up here. Let's take this from Robert Craig again, who wants to have us weigh in a little bit on Negan moving forward. He writes, how long do you see the Negan story arc going? I think he'll definitely be on at least through season 7, but do you think it will be longer? I can't see Rick being subservient to Negan for too long without it ruining the show. What do you guys think? So, Alex, how long do you think the Negan story arc goes? It feels like it's at least a season, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's probably at least a couple seasons.
Yeah.
And that's for me not necessarily saying that there's going to be 2 seasons of Rick being complacent. But Negan, to me, is the biggest bad we've encountered so far. Like, even the governor didn't have anywhere near the reach, the pull, the resources that this guy seems to command. So if Rick is going to take this guy down, ultimately, it's not going to be a quick fix. I mean, Rick, we've already saw that he raided one of Negan's compounds and killed what he thought was all of Negan's guys, and doesn't seem to have really fazed them at all. So we have no idea the depth of Negan's resources or, you know, what he's capable of. So there's going to be a lot of time, you know, available where I think for Rick to ultimately take him down, he's going to need to learn more about who Negan is and what he really has available at his disposal, because you can't – I think the big takeaway from that raid is that you need to know your enemy before you engage. And I think that's the real issue with Negan now, is that he's still very much shrouded in mystery. We haven't really seen what his real setup looks like.
Yeah, still to be determined. Lots more on Negan, I think, at least this season. I think that we're going to see a good amount of that guy. He's clearly the big bad on the show right now. And I think trying to forecast how long that's going to last, you really, you know, shoulders in the air. This show is never ending, folks. So Negan's here forever. He's here for the rest of all time. One final question. I thought that this was fun. This is from Spencer. How feasible is it for Rick's crew and the Alexandrians to sneak away and leave outside Negan's sphere of influence, probably far away from the DC area, so that they no longer have to be under his thumb? If Rick's group is supposed to start scavenging for Negan's crew, those roadblocks in the season 6 finale have to be cleared away, right? If so, what's stopping Rick and company from driving away and never looking back? Do you think Negan has them under constant surveillance?
I think he might at this point. Even if he doesn't, I think that was the whole point of the roadblock game that he played, is just to let you know that there's nowhere you can go where I can't follow, that you don't have the fuel to get you far enough away for there's nowhere that the gas remaining on this in this country can get you that I can't follow.
Right.
And so, you know, could they try to maybe book it north or, you know, some other direction that they haven't really looked into too much? Maybe, but, you know, they'd have to be constantly looking over their shoulder too. Is it necessarily safer? No, because if Negan catches them, he's going to, you know, be pissed, as opposed to the scenario where you just kind of give him stuff. I think for right now, all you can do is acquiesce and try to find a solution in the meantime.
Once again, it's a lose Lucille situation.
Totally.
It's not good. All right. Those are the questions we've got. Alex, great stuff, my friend.
Oh, it was such a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Unbelievable stuff. Really, really fun digging into the premiere again. I'm excited for episode 2. But I know it sounds like BS that I'm excited about The Walking Dead right now, but I am actually really excited for episode 2. It's called The Well, once again directed by Greg Nicotero. And based on the previews, it looks like it's the Carol and Morgan show in the kingdom. Really pumped for people to find out what the kingdom is. Really excited. Like, I'm anticipating seeing how they bring that to life. Because the kingdom really does feel to me like a smack in the face from the comics to the show of like, I dare you to adapt me. Adapt me. Can you pull it off? There's like a tiger involved and sort of like medieval speak and all sorts of stuff. So can Walking Dead do a good job with that? I'm excited to find out. So that's going to be episode 2, The Well, coming up on Sunday night. Rob and I will be back with a recap right after the episode. No delay this time. And we'll have another feedback show next week. Again, to get your questions in, plenty of different ways. TWD@postshowrecaps.com is our email address. Our feedback form is postshowrecaps.com/feedback. And you can send in voicemails, which we'll start taking as soon as next week. postshowrecaps.com/voicemail. Alex, hashtag, do you like Lose Lucille? Is that good?
I do. I like that.
And also, I liked hashtag Reek Grimes if you're a Game of Thrones fan.
That was the other one I was thinking of.
Yeah, either one of those will work. All right, follow Alex. He's on Twitter. You're at Alex Kidwell, correct?
Yes, sir.
It's the full name. I'm at Round Howard. We'll be back with another episode of The Walking Dead podcast here on Post Show Recaps on Sunday night. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.